خارج جدار رفعي اما جاسا ستين ودا واتين دين اسا ممبر اوز اوز ممبر اوز جنرال بابليك ودا ادا ممبر اسا ستين اسا must join the members. Those who come to account there, they must face the members.
Okay.
So that you must be able to see.
I'm under your command.
I think we should start the honorable members. See officials from the department are here. Well, the item before us is a ratification of the parents agreement, which we are scheduled to consider today. I think we can be confident to proceed with this. We should be confident to proceed with this, as it has been referred to us in terms of the ATC issued today. So yeah, welcome DDG and the team from DIA. Are you ready to take us through? Well, just with the apologies, as we know, the minister is still in Morocco. Attending the CRICOP meetings there. We haven't heard anything from the deputy minister's office. The DG, is the apology from the DG?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. Yes, Honourable Chair, there's an apology from the DG.
Well, we don't have it. I thought the DG must apologize to us.
Okay.
To the committee for not being able to make it. But I guess in future we'll receive written apologies. The members are here. We are ready to start. Can I hand over to the DG?
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, and good afternoon to you, and thank you for the opportunity to present this item to you. What we are bringing to you is, it's a briefing also to seek approval for ratification of the 2015 Paris Agreement on Climate Change. Prior to the meeting, the 22nd Conference of the Parties that will start in Morocco on the 7th of November. Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, I think the background Honourable Members are quite familiar with. The Paris Agreement is a legal instrument concluded and adopted at the end of last year amongst a great amount of global applause. The Universal Agreement's main objective is to keep the increase in the global average temperature to well below 2 degrees Celsius and to pursue efforts to limit further to 1.5 degrees above pre-industrial levels. And Honourable Chair, at COP21, in terms of Decision 1, CP21, the ad hoc working group on the Paris Agreement was launched to conclude all of the preparatory work that is necessary to underpin the operationalization of the Paris Agreement. You'll recall that there is an agenda, there's the pre-2020 agenda and the post-2020 agenda, and the Paris Agreement at this time last year was intended only to enter into force by 2020. As a result, As a result of the certain geopolitical processes and dynamics, this has taken quite a fast forward. And whereas the double threshold is 55 parties to the convention, accounting in total for at least 55% of the total global greenhouse gas emissions, what was reached on the 5th of October, which is really only 2 weeks ago, was exactly that. We achieved the double threshold. And in fact, every day, if honourable members have a look at the UNFCCC website, which is www.unfccc.int, you will see that the number of parties ratifying is increasing every day. This was written just 2 days ago, and I think that the number of parties is up to 83. So, and as each party adds their ratification to the global numbers, so accounting for the percentage of global emissions also goes up. So what we now have is that the Conference of the Parties, serving as the meeting of the parties, in short, CMA 1, the first meeting of the parties for the Paris Agreement, will be convened during COP22 in Marrakesh. So this is really a cause for great celebration. And there's great excitement about it. There are, however, a number of questions that need to be considered. For example, how do we ensure that the meetings of the parties are as inclusive as possible? In other words, we want as many parties as possible to ratify the agreement, and we want as much of the preparatory work to be concluded before the real decision making takes place. So the first meeting of the parties is likely to be convened with a very short agenda at the probably in the second week of COP22, and it is likely then to be suspended or adjourned, probably until 2018. To allow more parties time to conclude their domestic ratification processes, and in particular to allow for the ad hoc working group on the Paris Agreement to conclude what is becoming known as the rule book for the Paris Agreement. And these are the set of multilateral rules that will underpin the operationalization. For example, the multilateral set of rules on transparency, the multilateral set of rules that will guide and manage the program of setting nationally determined contributions, reporting against those nationally determined contributions, and then doing a global stocktake process every 5 years. The agreement, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members are fully aware, it needs to be approved by Parliament, and that would be before we can deposit our instrument. Steps that have taken and been concluded, we have done the necessary legal opinion, or we received the necessary legal opinion from the Department of International Relations and the Department of Justice. Minister, in fact, signed the agreement, the Paris Agreement, on the 21st of April in New York, signalling that South Africa is one of the many countries that puts its full support behind it. And also, I think importantly, this was an important move because South Africa really was the custodian of this Paris Agreement, in the sense that the multilateral four-year negotiation process leading to the conclusion of the Paris Agreement was initiated in Durban, and that negotiation process took place under the Durban platform, and that Durban platform was came into being under the leadership of South Africa. We've done an extensive process of consultation, and that was, we started with South Africa's intended nationally determined contribution consultation in 2015, as well as South Africa's mandate going into 2015. We then this year, in 2016, did an extensive consultation process, a workshop per province, on the outcomes of the Paris COP21 Paris negotiations, on ratification of the Paris Agreement, and on the next steps in terms of our position going into COP22. In terms of benefits of ratification of the Paris Agreement, it really for the first time brings all nations into a common cause based on our historic, current, future responsibilities. And the benefits of ratification are that we now have a strong legally binding international framework, which from 2020 guides the global response to the global challenge of climate change. And ratification, therefore, adding our voice and our country's contribution to the growing numbers of countries that have ratified, ensures that political momentum is maintained at the international level, and that includes the momentum on finalising the rule set to operationalise the agreement. And of course, it maintains and builds momentum at the domestic implementation level in our country and in all countries. Global cooperation in limiting temperature increase to 1.5 degrees is that's one of the critical global goals. It means that countries have to be committed and have to achieve their commitments that are outlined in their nationally determined contributions. And it means that parties need to act promptly to put in place measures. I must just clarify that early entry into force does not bring forward the time frames of commitments. This is still the post 2020 multilateral climate regime, but it carries the political momentum, and it ensures, for example, that the biggest polluters such as the USA and China are in, next slide, thank you. The Paris Agreement also mobilizes multilateral effort to achieve the global adaptation goal, thereby raising the profile and importance of support for developing countries in adapting to the impacts of climate change. This was a really important achievement for the African group, because, as you know, the African countries really are the lowest some of the lowest contributors and the highest impacted, given the fact that global temperature increase in parts of Africa is expected to be between 3 and 6 degrees, with severe implications in terms of water security, food security. So this global adaptation goal rallies international support for countries in their efforts to adapt to the impact of climate change. And it also makes the link between global mitigation scenarios and global adaptation scenarios. So the more effort there is globally to reduce emissions, the less the impact is going to be and the less the implications for countries to adapt to the impact. And conversely, the less emission reduction efforts, the greater the impact and the greater the adaptation implications. So the Paris Agreement also, it requires parties to undertake and communicate their nationally determined contributions, which must present a progression over time towards achieving the purpose of the agreement, and recognises that developing countries require support for these efforts. It also requires the global stocktake to assess the collective progress towards achieving the purpose of the agreement. And what's really important here is that as you see in the second bullet there, countries have to communicate their nationally determined contributions. So at a national level, countries are determining what their fair share is. At the same time, at a global collective level, there is now a process to assess progress, identifying the gaps, determine whether the world is on track to reach the two degrees and 1.5 degrees temperature goal. And what's critical here also is that parties are required to take into account the outcome of the global stocktake in their next cycle of formulating nationally determined contributions. There's a set of the countries of Africa that have already ratified, but I'm sure that even since yesterday, that number has gone up. One of the questions is, and in relation to Article 16 of the Paris Agreement, it's only parties that have in fact ratified the agreement that shall have decision-making powers during the meeting of the parties. And so this is one of the reasons that the proposal is on the table to postpone or adjourn the first meeting of the parties to ensure that there's greater inclusivity and more countries are seated at the table with full decision-making powers. Next slide. Given our leading role in the negotiation process leading up to Paris, we're recommending that the ratification process is prioritized. In terms of how to handle the early entry into force, there have been various proposals that are in discussion around whether the ad hoc working group on the Paris Agreement is discontinued and the meeting of the party takes forward the preparatory work. South Africa is not in favour of the first one. Whether the meeting of the parties continues the work with support of the ad hoc working group on the Paris Agreement or the subsidiary bodies. We're not in support of the second one. We're in support of the third and the fourth options. Next slide. So in terms of implications for South Africa, it requires South Africa and all countries to, as I've indicated, submit their nationally determined contribution every 5 years. We submitted our INDC and we've submitted our commitments for 2025 and 2030. We need to develop policies and measures to implement our NDCs and to report on progress, and I think it's important to say that this work is well underway. Policies and measures include measures such as the Renewable Energy Independent Power Producers Program that South Africa is really quite a flagship of South Africa's efforts to shift our energy mix to having a greater percentage of renewable energies. The work such as the Green Transport Strategy that is being led by the Department of Transport is another such example, and Honourable Chair, it might be quite useful to invite the Department of Transport to present on their green transport strategy. We need to account for progress in meeting the goals set in our nationally determined contribution. We therefore need to and have started putting a climate change response tracking system in place. And the first annual climate change response report has been published. In fact, if I had not been flying from Morocco, this morning I would have brought packs for members. We have quite a nice set of annual reports, and I will make available a set of packs as soon as we have the next opportunity. And that annual report on climate change will, on an annual basis, demonstrate the extent to which South Africa's programs, low emission and adaptation programs, are making progress. The extent to which we are achieving significant reductions in emissions, CO2 emissions, the extent to which we are, for example, achieving a better indication of conservation of our water resources and therefore becoming more resilient over time. We also need to submit our biannual reports to the UNFCCC on our national circumstances, our emissions, our adaptation programs. The second biannual update report has been published for public comment, and the 2010 to 2012 greenhouse gas emission inventory has been also published for public comment. So both of those documents will be submitted, will be ready to submit to the UNFCCC at the end of this year. We are in the process of developing a national climate change adaptation strategy. It's very well underway. And a framework for reducing greenhouse gas emissions has been agreed by Cabinet. In terms of the national adaptation strategy, Honourable Chair, what you will recall from the previous briefing that a number of sectoral departments have prepared adaptation strategies. So the Department of Agriculture, Department of Water Affairs, Department of Health have prepared their adaptation strategies, as have provinces. Provinces have done their own vulnerability assessments, and a number of provinces have concluded their strategies. So what the national adaptation strategy does is it pulls together all of the different efforts at national, provincial, and local level, and those adaptation planning processes have been informed by the long-term adaptation scenarios, which have set out what the climate scenarios, the impact scenarios, and the adaptation options are. We really now, what we are doing with the National Adaptation Strategy is making a very sound business case for adapting to the impacts of climate change in the different contexts. So whether it's in the road sector, or whether it's in the food security sector, or whether it's in the human settlement sector, really clearly demonstrating where there may be a set of vulnerabilities that come together to make South Africa more vulnerable over time, and putting in place a short, medium, and long-term adaptation strategy. In terms of our greenhouse gas emission reduction framework, we've put in place a set of carbon budgets for high-emitting companies, and those companies need to report on a regular basis. They need to also indicate, they need to develop a plan that indicates how they will achieve the carbon budget that has been set. The first five-year cycle is essentially on the basis of current operations. So what we're doing in the first 5 years is ensuring that we have the necessary institutional arrangements and reporting arrangements in place. And then from 2021, the carbon budgeting cycle will be in accordance with legislation. A climate change response monitoring evaluation system, as I had said, is already developed. We are increasing pace of implementation. We need to, as a country, we need to scale up investment significantly in renewable energy, public transport, energy efficiency, waste management, and land restoration initiatives countrywide in order to reduce the greenhouse gas emissions intensity of our economy. And I've already spoken about the adaptation. Next slide. Thank you, Chair. And the recommendation is for ratification of the 2015 Paris Agreement. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, actually. That's the presentation, colleague. We have also scheduled colloquium, as you know, on Friday next week, to further unpack the state of readiness of our country and to get more details on the negotiating mandate. So Judy is also going to present in that colloquium. So yeah, we can engage on the members on the ratification. It's quite urgent that we handle this matter and we get it programmed for consideration by the House as soon as possible. Because as you know, South Africa has been one of those countries who played a catalyst role in the adoption of this agreement, and we don't want to be the last to ratify. It's a good thing that Obama wants it to be his flagship when he leaves office. So that's why there's been such a momentum to get everything else to all the countries to ratify. But it's a good thing, because for the first time in the history of efforts to reduce climate change, has there been such a momentum? From the Kyoto Protocol, some of the countries were not wanting to come to the table and all of this. But now there's been this movement, so we must not fall behind. I think that's the point that is coming across. Honourable members, I see just one hand, so it does look like we are content. The general is Honourable Makubela, Honourable Lomisa, and Honourable Kade.
Thanks, Chair. Indeed, we agree with the ratification. From where I'm seated, I think there's no issue about that. We spearheaded this thing from the time it was here in South Africa. We led it. So, largely, the outcome of the Paris Agreement can be claimed to be our own, together collectively with those that supported it. So it just makes sense that we should be among those in the forefront to ratify it. I don't think there's much of the question. The process that is outlined here, we're aware about how the consultations were made, stakeholders brought on board, even before this, some of the negotiations. So we knew what our intended national determinations were, and so on, as they will be changed into the national determined goals and so on. But all I wanted to understand, Chair, is on slide 10 or page 10, so you can just say, on the options, where it said option 1 and 2 is not in our favor, South Africa would go with 3 and 4. Mind you, does that apply even after ratification? Or they don't necessarily, we have got these challenges now that are not ratified, but once we ratify, the issue of options is no longer an issue. You know, I just want to get that. But then, Chair, on your issue to say we should put it as soon as possible, meaning before Parliament rises this year. I think I thought that's what you said. And I think we're in agreement if that is the case. Thanks, Chair.
And that's a recommendation. General?
Thank you, Chairperson. I don't have a problem on the ratification side of things. I'm more interested on, briefly, I know you can refer to a long time, but since COP17, are there any programs on the ground which are taking place in order to educate our people? And secondly, if we pay these ratification fees, how easy or difficult it is to access the global funding? for our local project. To effect the very decision which has been taken by the world. So not just ratifying things and all appear as merely a Father Christmas. What are the returns for our own environment? And are we working closely, for instance, with the Department of Education with a view to educate our people in this country, starting from the schools up to communities and industries? Thank you.
Thank you, General Tolero Kare.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm partly covered by the Honorable Oromisa, but to put it quite directly, I would like to ask a specific question, Honorable Chair. According to the presentation, the Paris Agreement shall come into force on the date of day after the date of which 65 parties, now we have more than 55 countries or who have ratified the Paris Agreement. I would like to know, can we tap into the Green Fund in order to be able to do our adaptation as a country? Can we tap into the fund? That's, I would like to be more specific.
Mm.
Or are we going to wait until after 2018 where all other parties would have deposited their instrument of ratification? The other thing I wanted to ask Chairperson was, I wanted to know what is the country's instrument of ratification. What instrument are we going to use? Our instrument of ratification. I think Julie will be able to answer me on that one. The third and the last question, Chairperson. I hear that we have produced our first annual climate change response report. Is it available on the DIA's website? If we go there, can we have a look at ourselves? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Mobile.
No, thanks, Chair. Largely covered by the week, but just one or two comments. The first one would be around the posture that any harm done to the environment is a harm to humanity, as the departure point, as a comment. Now, actually presented, one is deeply encouraged by the actual figures, status of ratification. I mean, it has surpassed the 55%, 81 out of 197. I just want to know that now, as we are moving to COP22 from the 7th to the 18th of November 2016 in Morocco, are we expecting some other countries to join? And I've seen that other countries have just gone through it, Angola and many other African countries have said, which is also deeply encouraging. So mine basically, Chair, is just to say that this is really a positive development.
Mm.
And I agree with the Chair to say that we can't be lacking, as we have been the moral voice globally. But also not forgetting that globally this program has been supported broadly by organs of civil society, especially now Pope Francis, Maria has been very critical around the failure to reach will be catastrophic. So I'm deeply encouraged. That's the comment that I want to make there, to sustain this program.
Mm.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you very much. I know Honorable Madil is passionate about the involvement of the Pope. Brokering this agreement. He doesn't fail to remind us every time he thinks that he has played a particular role. I've looked at the published documents of the Marrakesh conference, and I see they are billing it as the first meeting of the parties to the Paris Agreement. Now you think that you anticipate, I don't know what makes you to have that anticipation, that probably the meeting is going to be postponed until 2019. Maybe you must just brief us what makes you to have that confidence, because it might well proceed to consider other important issues. And you know, if we are not a party to that, those parties will then take a decision. So yeah, that's just my question. So you can answer the members, Julie.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. Let me start with your point, Honourable Chair, because I think that's an important, really important point of departure. So COP22 has many parallel meetings, or the conferences of the parties, the conference of parties under the United Nations Framework Convention has a number of different subsidiary bodies. It has the Conference of the Parties, it has the Conference of the Parties serving as the meeting of the parties for the Kyoto Protocol, and then it has the subsidiary body on technological advice, it has the subsidiary body on implementation, it now also has the ad hoc working group on the Paris Agreement, and then comes the first meeting of the parties. So all of those subsidiary bodies meet in parallel, and the Moroccan chair has built this meeting, a meeting of action, implementation, and then convening of the first meeting of the parties of the Paris Agreement. So the discussion that was now took place in the pre-COP is how do we balance a signal to the world that is implementation and action and a continued momentum from the Paris Agreement, because the Paris Agreement really created a moment of celebration worldwide. And the concern has been that the Moroccan COP must maintain that level of momentum. And the conversation at the pre-COP was in relation to this first meeting of the Paris Agreement. Yes, there must be continued momentum, and we need to balance that with inclusivity of as many parties as possible to be part of the decision-making process. If that meeting of the parties, the first meeting of the parties of the Paris Agreement, were to continue regardless, and this goes to Honourable Makabela's question about the different options, the four options involving some level of suspension. For options one and two, perhaps we can go there, so just to slide 10. Yes. So for the bullets, the first two bullets indicate that the conference of the party, the meeting of the parties of the Paris Agreement, continues with the preparatory work, and the second bullet is it continues with the preparatory work with the support of the subsidiary bodies and the ad hoc working group on the Paris Agreement. Now, the problem with those two items, those two bullets, is that only parties that have ratified would then be in a decision-making seat. And for South Africa, and I think for most of the African group and most of the developing country bloc, we would want to leave no one behind. That was a very strong signal from our South African chair of the Group of 77 last year, was leave no one behind. We move forward with momentum and dedication, but we leave no one behind. So the thinking, therefore, and I think it is from the meeting now in Marrakesh, it was a very broadly supported view that in order for the meeting of the parties, the CMA, to retain solid credibility, it must, we must allow additional time for more parties to ratify, and so that all, as many parties of the 197 can be in the decision-making seats and not sitting as an observer if you have not ratified.
Just interject. CMA will just explain that CMA.
So CMA is the conference of the parties, that's the C, serving as the meeting of the parties for, the, that's the M, for the Paris Agreement. It's a very strange acronym.
It's
the A. It's a very strange acronym.
Okay.
So,
because people, you know, COP, very well understood.
COP is understood.
Conference of the Parties.
Yes.
Very simple.
Yeah.
CMA.
It's a new one. Yeah.
Right.
And everyone's quite familiar also with COPMOP, which is for the Kyoto Protocol. COPMOP is the conference of the parties serving as the meeting of the parties for the Kyoto Protocol. And I think to distinguish between the COPMOP for the Kyoto Protocol and the COPMOP for the Paris Agreement, there was a decision to have an acronym CMA. So that is essentially the meeting of, that will be the decision-making body for the Paris Agreement, but that meeting requires parties to have ratified in order for parties to have decision-making powers within that meeting. And so that, Honourable Makovele, is the reason that we have been supporting the last two bullets and suggesting that the meeting of the parties for the Paris Agreement be suspended, and the ad hoc working group, the APA, continues its work program. It is working. It is working well. We've only really essentially had one meeting in June in Bonn, but that APA, that ad hoc working group on the Paris Agreement, is where all of the multilateral rules supporting the Paris Agreement need to be negotiated, and we want that body to conclude as much of the work as possible and as many parties as possible to ratify, so that we have a very solid process. There are various slightly different variables on the theme of suspension. Some, like Brazil for example, is concerned that the term suspension gives a sense that we are now dragging our feet. There was a lot of momentum and now all of a sudden we're suspending the first meeting of the parties. Let's rather just adjourn it. Well, we've checked the rules of procedure. There's not very much difference between the terminology of suspend and adjourn. We've asked the UNFCCC legal secretariat to provide advice. The period of 2018 is also another question. Why 2018? 2018 at this stage is the time that seems a reasonable period of time to allow other parties to ratify, but it also seems a reasonable period of time within which to conclude the most important multilateral rule sets to underpin the Paris Agreement. In all likelihood, there will be some kind of an assessment before we get to 2018 or during the course of 2018. To check the extent of progress, but the concern was that we do not want to lose momentum. So we do not now want a situation in which we wait until 2020 and then parties that are dragging their feet in ratification then have too much time to ratify. And the negotiation process takes long. The negotiators are well known to be really using the envelope of time that they have. So 2018 seemed to be a reasonable compromise. The truth of the matter is that there are still legal and procedural matters that have not been worked through. China, for example, is very, very careful about legal and procedural issues, and they have their lawyers looking into it in depth. But in broad at a political level, it seemed from Morocco that that would be the way we would be going. Then on Honourable Holomisa's question around, and also Honourable Mambilo's question around the Green Fund and accessing the Green Fund, The Green Fund is now fully operational. South Africa certainly can access it. We already have two accredited entities, or entities that have been accredited, and that is the Development Bank DBSA, as well as SANBI, the South African National Biodiversity Institute. The role of the accredited entities is really to support countries in packaging proposals. The Green Fund, the modus operandi of the Green Fund is that it seeks transformative or programs that are catalytic of transformative action. So rather than just being a fund that funds lots of small projects, it's taking a programmatic approach, and it's taking large programs, and countries therefore need to formulate those programs with an understanding of what the barriers are. So we need to formulate our programs applications to the GCF, understanding what the barriers are for implementation and scale up. And we are hosting a workshop, a couple of workshops in fact. One of those workshops is on the 31st of October, in just in a week, 10 days time, where we're asking, it's like an ABC of the Green Fund, to enable government departments, civil societies, others, whoever is interested in how the Green Fund operates and how best to access the Green Fund. We're providing a sort of a capacity building workshop in that respect.
What is the maximum that a country can apply for?
There's no limit. At the moment,
what is the current capitalization of the Green Fund?
$10.2 billion.
Okay.
And it has just disbursed a total of $745 million. It's disbursed to, I'll read you the countries. There's a sustainable energy facility in the Eastern Caribbean. There's $16.7 million for Senegal, integrated urban flood management. There's $39 million for in Morocco. There's climate resilient agriculture in Namibia. There's an adaptation program also in Namibia. So I mean, there's a whole range of them. There's a landscapes program in Madagascar. Yeah, so there's a range of different programs. The key issue is to package applications to the Green Fund in a manner that is really clearly catalyzing transformative change. And what we have done is we've put together a framework, a Green Climate Fund framework for South Africa. And that sets out what our, as for South Africa, what our strategic priorities are in terms of implementation, and guiding the kinds of proposals that South Africa would like to submit. And those proposals can be submitted by business, by government, by civil society, etc. I think we've dealt with the funding. Honourable Holomisa also raised a question about working with the Department of Education, and I think the programs following from COP17. Honourable Holomisa, yes, indeed, there were a number of programs that were launched at COP17. In particular, there was a solar program. To some extent, those programs have been wrapped up in our Renewable Energy Independent Power Producers program. In our national energy efficiency program, which the Department of Energy is now leading, in our green transport strategy. So I think, and a number of the provinces are leading awareness raising and educational programs, and yes, we are working with the Department of Education. Thanks, Honourable.
There's a question about, I'll come to your general.
there's a question that Honorable Khadem raised about what would it mean to deposit our instrument of ratification. Just answer that. My understanding is that Parliament must approve, and then after Parliament ratifies, then you will have to take it from there. You must tell us where do you take it to.
Okay. Yeah, thank you, Chair. What actually happens once it's recorded as a decision of both the NCOP and the National Assembly, we then refer those decisions to DIRCO, to the Department of International Relations and Cooperation, and their State Law Advisor's Office draws up a legal instrument which the Minister of Foreign Affairs or the Minister of DIRCO would sign, and then our mission in New York would deposit that instrument with the Office of the Secretary General of the United Nations, because he's been allocated the depository task.
Okay, thank you. General, follow up, and Honorable Mokubela.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to propose that perhaps the government must take lead in coming up with a national program to transform, for instance, or improve the quality of life, especially in the rural areas and in some townships, when it comes to this issue. I don't think it's wise that we should only rely on NGOs only to access this funding. The state itself should lead. I have an idea where, for instance, we can put a strong case in this global fund by saying, as a result of the segregation we had in this country in the past, you still see that there is what you would call apartheid environment, where the cities look green, but immediately you reach townships and the rural areas, it's brown completely. So we need, therefore, a comprehensive program which would cater for the rural areas. This thing of allowing only the established big institutions or botanical gardens institutions accessing this funding, it doesn't reach the people on the ground. So we need to have a comprehensive program which would cater, for instance, if you drive through from KZN, Eastern Cape, up to Limpopo, there are patches where you can see, here this is a third world infrastructure. Here the soil erosion is high. Here the grass is no more. So we need to have a sort of a workshop as a country. Bring all the stakeholders, Department of Agriculture, farmers, everybody, traditional leaders, and say this is a program which we want to embark upon to revive life in those areas. And then you will see that the ecosystems will come back in some of the areas where it's now looking barren. It's the same program. The state maybe will help to say we need to demarcate grazing land, we need to demarcate land where people can plant their mealy fields and so on. Currently, there's just breakdown of discipline. animals are just loitering all over the show. So we can't live like this.
Thank you, General. Follow-up request?
Chair, perhaps for the first point, let me take it off where General Lolomis has left it. And by the way, welcome him to the committee. Perhaps that will be sustained.
Unfortunately, this program clashes with this
Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence, 10 o'clock every Tuesday. So today it was just 2 o'clock, and then let me grab this opportunity.
But we welcome your participation. I think the good points that you are raising. Maybe we must excuse yourself there to be to come to the site more often. Honorable Quest?
No, it's fine. I think that's the point, Chair, just to say when he does find time to be here, it's useful, and we do welcome your inputs and so on. But just to say, perhaps I had understood the manner in which this matter was responded to earlier, to say we do need to put a scientific business plan that will talk to adaptation and mitigation to the extent that as a country we are able to access this one. And I think what General Lolomisa is raising is that probably our own people may not be able to do that. To the extent that we need a balance, where either CSIR or SOS and other people, in the light or in the wake of this drought we face, should put that on behalf of some of these areas, and then the money can be accessed. Otherwise, it will mean those who will access this funding will be those who are able to put up these plans, and it will sideline the majority of our people, because it may not be in the interest of all of them. So the workshops should try to talk to that. Even some of these public institutions of ILM can assist in that regard. I'm just throwing this thing without having to respond to it. But in the main, Chair, I wanted to still come to the issues we raised earlier. I've heard the one which you raised, which was being responded to. To say the possibilities that we can get there in the meeting of the parties and they proceed. And the anticipation that we seem confident on to say it won't proceed will be either suspended or agenda not be dealt with. And therefore we should be ready for whatever happens. The second point is my view, Chair, in as much as I'm with you in the Obama legacy, it's possible that in the Trump administration, certain things may be reversed. but is that beyond
me? Not get to that point.
But I'm just saying.
Let's praise ourselves for errors or for three.
That to a greater extent, I think countries should be. Right, I think that's what you're talking about, but I'm coming to the point that I raised. To say perhaps the statement to say option 1 and 2 are not in favor of South Africa, our sister and 4, is that once we ratify, I think the meeting of the parties will be in our favor because we shall have ratified. But 1 and 2 is not in favor of inclusivity.
Exactly.
As a principle,
yes.
Not necessarily the us as South Africa,
yes.
But by then we'll be covered.
Yes.
You know, all I'm saying is, I'm saying there's a difference. It does not necessarily affect us once we're ratified. And the explanation that is now given in terms of what then happens in terms of the instrument, I think it talks more to the domestication. That after ratification, we need to domesticate this thing, and whether that will be everything, we may want to satisfy ourselves, Chair, in terms of that domestication process, to saying this is how we'll go about implementing it in our own country. So I thought I needed to make those few points.
Thank you, Chair. we continue, we must also bear in mind that the colloquia will be able to get in depth. For instance, the negotiating position, which I hopefully were told cabinet has agreed to, which will be presented in the colloquia, which will further seek to respond to some of the questions which are raised here. But note the questions. I would like us to conclude a bit early, maybe by 4:20 so that's complete.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think the previous speakers have just stressed what I wanted to, or just stole the words from my mouth, what I wanted to say. But there is a big need to do a further consultation, especially with the departments, and inform them of our nationally determined contributions, so that we don't have a situation where we are speaking as if we come from different countries. I'll mention one thing that was mentioned by the CEO of ESCOM, where he said that he will no longer sign any purchase power purchase agreements for renewables. This is if it's coming from another country, it's not from South Africa. But as you just mentioned to me, that part of the INDC is to ensure that we tap into renewables, like your solar, your wind. Those are the renewables. So we really need to be consulting with the other departments, like Honorable Oromisa was mentioning. We need to speak with one voice as the government, not as if we're coming from different countries, whereas we come from the one country. I think there is really a need. I don't know whether the department should be proactive in playing a lead role in ensuring that the department draw the line and see where the country needs to be going. Otherwise, it will be like you are doing something else as we rectify our Paris Agreement. At the end of the day, it doesn't materialize that we kept the emissions as we have put signature on pen and paper. It will work nothing at all. Thank you, Chairperson.
Just on the point about Kadir, because of this concern that we have invited ESCO within the program. They are coming next week to share with us their contribution towards using this program of renewable energy through the IPPs. So we have written them a letter and hopefully they will come and engage with us. And because it's quite strange that they're taking signaling and turning left when people are turning right. But we will engage with them and then get to hear their reasoning behind what they are doing. Julie?
Thanks, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I think Alf and I will share the issues here. Let me come to the point of domestication. Domestication has many interpretations, but one of those interpretations is what, from a legal perspective, is the country doing? Also what, from a programmatic perspective, is the country doing to implement our commitments? From a legal perspective, we're in the process of analyzing the various pieces of legislation that are applicable to either supporting South Africa's efforts to adapt to the impacts of climate change, or constraining, as the case may be, or supporting or constraining our efforts to reduce emissions. So we're doing a full analysis of what pieces of legislation do we need to be strengthening to make sure that we have a coherent approach from a legal perspective. At the same time, we recognize that to implement our emission reduction framework, at the moment we're using the National Air Quality Act. We're using provisions in the National Air Quality Act for purposes of requiring industry to prepare pollution prevention plans. That's Section 29, and we're using also the Air Quality Act for the reporting regulations, the greenhouse gas reporting regulations. We are not able to use the Air Quality Act at this stage for the carbon budgeting. So there's part of that piece of work is about analysing the legal options towards a coherent legal framework for reducing or for South Africa's climate change response strategy, both adaptation and mitigation and reporting. And that we can report on progress whenever Honourable Chair and Honourable Members would like to hear. I think an important part of the Department of Environment's work is to engage with the sector departments, as you've indicated, the importance of really being part of those sector department processes. So the integrated resource plan, for example, on the electricity, on South Africa's electricity strategy, we are engaging strongly in that and in the integrated energy planning process. Because you're correct, opportunities within the power sector are probably the low-hanging fruits to some extent for reducing emissions. There are different ways, whether it's wind, whether it's renewables, there are other options, of course. But certainly from an emission reduction perspective and from the perspective of meeting our commitment of reducing our emissions to a range of between 398 and 614 megatons by between 2025 and 2030, we need to look and harvest every possible emission reduction opportunity. I think Alf, you had some inputs on the Green Fund.
Yeah, thank you, Honourable Hulumisa. I think we must just understand how the Green Climate Fund works. Those accredited entities are not project implementers. They act as what we call intermediaries. Mm. Because the Green Climate Fund is not funding $500,000 projects or $1 million projects or even $5 million projects. Mm. They want to disburse big money and hold these accredited entities accountable. The responsibility of the accredited entity is to facilitate exactly what Honourable Hulumisa is suggesting. So it would be a municipality-led greening of township initiative. That might be the name of the program. And the DBSA would be then disbursing the Green Climate Fund for that particular program, not only to one municipality, but to a number of municipalities. So that's the reason why the Green, they're funding transformative programmatic approaches, not project by project by project. So those entities are the ones which are now responsible for big project management type things. So dispersing the money to a number of implementers in that respect. So for an example, it's an interesting decision. There's some 360 million or something was allocated to the European Development Bank. Now, and it looks funny because the European Development Bank is not a developing country, but they are running sustainable energy programs in developing countries. It's a bit strange sometimes when you see that list and you can say, hey, but and Deutsche Bank, which is not Deutsche Bank, is not even a government entity; it's a private bank in Germany. They got, I don't know, 80 million or something for a program that they run in developing countries. Just Just in terms of Honourable Makobena, just to go back to the CMA1, the Paris Agreement and its accompanying decision, 1CP21, stipulates that the first session of the Conference of Parties serving as the meeting of parties to the Paris Agreement must do or shall do adopt all these rules and all these things. And it was only anticipated that that first session would probably meet only for the first time in 2019. That was the original anticipation. The cheese has moved because it's meeting now in 2016. So the challenge in front of us is how do we comply with the legal requirement of the first session of the Conference of Parties serving as the meeting of parties to adopt rules which have not yet been developed? That's the fundamental challenge. So that's the legal technical thing, and then there's the question of universal participation. So the backbone, the central backbone of the Paris Agreement and why it's so successful is that it's universal participation. We had in April this year with the signing ceremony of the Paris Agreement, it was 175 countries signed on one day, signed the Paris Agreement. It's the biggest multilateral single day signing ever in history. The previous one was the UN Law of the Sea, which was 109 countries. So it's got huge political momentum and a technical problem of how to manage the legal requirement of the first session adopting all the rules. That's the fundamental challenge. So I would anticipate that the first CMA session would do three things. First of all, it would do procedural issues, which is election of officers, adoption of the rules of procedure, and all these administrative things. So that would be part of the agenda. Then it would receive reports from all the subsidiary bodies which have been allocated work. So the APA, the subsidiary body on implementation, the subsidiary body on scientific and technological advice. There's been some work given to the least developed country expert group. And some work has been given to the adaptation committee. So all of these bodies will report to the CMA, and they will basically say, we haven't finished our work. That's what the report will say. Right. Mm-hmm. And what we anticipate then is that the CMA will then say, we hereby extend your mandate, and if there's further guidance and so on and so forth, and then extend the mandates. So that's the second piece of work which will happen. And the third piece of work is that there are three or four issues in the Paris Agreement and in the decision which has not been given to anyone. It's only been given to the CMA. And so the CMA will then have to take those issues and either make a decision, but then that's going to be an issue of inclusivity, or allocate that work to one of the bodies to take further. And so that's going to be a tough negotiation, because some countries may want to make a decision, some parties, and then other parties will be saying, but then you undermine inclusivity or universal participation. So that might be a bit of a tough negotiation, those three or four issues. So those are the three things that the CMA will do, and what we're hoping to achieve is the CMA will then say, we've gone as far as we can, because the work is not finished yet, we will adjourn and we will meet next year. I don't think that they're going to say we're going to meet in 2018. I don't think so. They will say we meet next year and we'll make a decision next year whether we have to 10 mandates or not. But our anticipation is that it's going to be extended on an annual basis till the work is finished, and we project that by 2018 it should be able to say our first session is now complete, and the next time we meet will be our second session of the CMA. So that's
CMA,
kind of...
CMA would meet annually?
Yes, it meets annually, alongside the COP. It's now a permanent body, because now you've got three decision-making bodies. You've got the COP, which is the decision-making body for the UNFCCC, the Convention on Framework Convention on Climate Change. You've got the COPMOP on the Kyoto Protocol, which is also a legal entity, because not all the parties of the convention have joined the Kyoto Protocol. And you've now got the CMA of the Paris Agreement, which is in the same position. Not all parties that are members of the convention have joined the Paris Agreement. Certainly not yet. We hope that they will all be there, but not yet. And my last point, no, I think Judy, you've covered that before.
Okay. Those are the responses. At some point, if or when all the members join the Paris Agreement, the COP UNFCCC might be irrelevant.
No.
Okay.
No.
All right, well, let's discuss that on Friday.
No, that's Honourable Chair, if I may, it's quite an important point, because the Paris Agreement is formulated under the United Nations Framework Convention.
Yes, I know.
Yeah.
I know, but I'm saying when all the countries join, that will be a flagship, meeting of the parties, where the main issue about global climate change will then be discussed. But anyway, let's look at the permutations when we then get into the SILAS engagement on Friday. Hopefully on Friday we'll be able to then get a presentation on the South Africa's negotiating position.
Yes.
We'll also get a briefing on the country's state of readiness to implement. That's what we were anticipating to then engage on, so that some of the issues that are arising from here can then be further explored in that. So I think we are done, Honourable Members. We are then required to formally take a resolution to ratify, after which we will then take it through the APC to the House. So can I just get an indication through a mover and a seconder whether Honourable Mabilu moves, Honourable Edward seconds. Are you seconding?
Really,
Richard's
a good teacher. I can
identify
someone.
No, I saw the hand. I thought the Honourable Edward is. No, we are in the formal. We just do go through the formalities to ratify or to take a resolution to approve and then to question the House to ratify. So Honourable Mabilu has moved. Can I get a second? Honourable Kekar, a second. All right. Any dissenting view?
Am I allowed to veto the whole set of
things?
Do you want to veto General? Okay. All right. So no objection. Agreed that we are recommending to the House to ratify the Paris Agreement. We will try and speak to those. those who are dealing with programming to prioritize this matter so that we're able to then get it done. The NCOP also has to deal with it, but I spoke to the chair there. He says they are meeting next Tuesday for the same thing. So there was a delay in tabling. Maybe we must just attend to that. Delay in tabling this, because it still has to be tabled in the NCOP and then referred.
Okay.
If you can just attend to that, so that by the time we leave here and then everything else is sorted.
Thank you.
Okay, so we should be done. We're supposed to adopt the BRRR, but I don't see the document circulated, the report. So we will then have to consider the doc. Doc? Now, Tarek? You are waiting for copies.
No, copies.
Let us give him copies.
May we be excused?
Yeah.
All right,
I'm just saying maybe we must go through it and then look at it on Monday. Is it fine?
On Tuesday.
Because it will be unfair to get members to read now and approve now. We should have circulated that before. No, not today, before. I know that I received the copy yesterday.
And I will receive it yesterday.
No, let's do it. There's no hurry. Let's find a microphone.
Is it quiet, members?
Yes, sir. We support it. Tuesday.
Thank you,
sir. Okay. There is no impact in terms of delay. Let's speak to the mic.
Yeah, hold on, members. The instruction that I got from from the manager is that we've got to process it and then analyze it. But what I do know is that there are certain committees that have not even met. You know, they will only meet next week to get the information for that.
What is the view? Do we have to go through it page by page, or can we just postpone it to Tuesday? So is you only get it now?
Yeah, I'm just checking my email.
Okay.
Looking at the dilemma that we are in, I think it's not good to be an issue of those who received and those who didn't. It does not augur well for the unit in the committee. I, for one, I had read it and I even had comments and so on. But it's good we can allow members to go through it. And early in the morning on Tuesday, when we meet, go through it as one of the items which will be urgent, meaning that then we must just adopt it. By the way, we have adopted page for page as a whole.
It's fine.
Compromise.
Let's allow members to go through it, and then so that when we meet Tuesday, we go through it page by page. I also wanted to suggest some certain things, the removal of certain things there, particularly issues that relate to the department, because we haven't dealt with the departmental annual report.
some. They must find ways in the. But anyway, we will deal with it on Tuesday. Is it fine?
Yes.
All right. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much for coming.
No, we spoke in the morning, so I thought she said yes.
Thank you so much. Bye bye, it was good.
No, I'm alright. Not like the usual.